Crude oil is crude. Natural gas is pure. That's why Pennzoil's base oil is made from natural gas, not crude. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30.
Today's opening tip, Rajon Rondo faking the lob to LeBron. But then, you know, he lays it in himself. So LeBron got him back by faking the block. Shanae, have you ever seen teammates do this before?
Oh, big facts. My big sis probably does this to me all the time.
Oh,
you're
really?
Supposed to pass it to me. I'm not passing it to you next time.
I think more intra-team sabotage could add something to some of these regular season games.
I mean, look, in the end, it ended up being a close game. But there was a point in this game where it just looked like the Lakers were looking for something to do while they also play the professional basketball team from Atlanta. The Hawks were scrappy in the end, though. That's something. Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols alongside ESPN NBA writer. And we just found out before the show went to air, you used to do color analysis when you were in college. Your career could have gone an entirely different way.
Right?
I don't think I was very good.
Kevin Hurwitz, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. There you go. We know what she's been up to. Multi-time WNBA All-Star. And, you know, Stanford, you were not calling the games. You were playing
in the games. I was playing in the games.
Chinegu,
you should have called one more game.
There you go.
Hack time would have been an upgrade.
Oh, hack time, maybe.
Coming up, we'll talk about the Mavericks. They're expected to be without Luka Doncic for about 2 weeks. Will that stretch alter Dallas's entire season? We will show you the schedule and why that's a real question. First, though, it was a big weekend for LeBron James. He was key in both the Lakers' wins in Miami and Atlanta. In fact, last night against the Hawks, Coach Frank Vogel called LeBron, quote, spectacular. But for LeBron himself, all of that paled in comparison to what he would later call, quote, one of the greatest moments of my life so far. On Saturday night, LeBron flew to Columbus, Ohio to see his oldest son, Bronny, play for Sierra Canyon High School against LeBron's alma mater, St. Vincent St. Mary. It was a big deal because before this, the Lakers' travel schedule had kept LeBron from attending any of his son's games in person. And it was a big deal because LeBron brought his past to the court along with him. His former high school teammates were all there. His extended family was all there. And together, they all watched Bronny play the St. V team that is still coached by LeBron's former coach and still plays in the uniforms that LeBron donated to them. ESPN broadcasted the game, and LeBron took a minute to talk about the whole surreal night at halftime with me. Take a listen.
LeBron, we've been talking about this in the days leading up to this, and I know you were looking forward to it all week, but what was it like walking in the building? This place went crazy, and you realized I'm actually here for the first time getting to watch my son play.
I think I was a lot more nervous than my son, you know, coming in here and you know, just being such a surreal moment, you know, for myself, for our family, for Bronny himself. It's pretty cool.
And it's not just that you're getting to see him play for the first time. He is playing, of course, against your old high school. And you've stayed so connected to St. V's. You refurbished their gym. It's now named after you. You provided them with these arenas, with these uniforms that they're wearing against your son tonight. Is it strange cheering against them?
Yeah, absolutely. I told my wife I needed to do, you know, what Steph Curry's mom always do and get to have St. Vincent St. Mary have a Sierra Canyon jersey for this game. But, you know, my heart is always going to be with St. V. Coach Drew is like a father to me, a father figure. He taught me so much, not only about the game of basketball, but about life and what it means to be a young man off the floor. So I'm always going to be indebted with St. V and Coach Drew. And, you know, it's just, like I said, it's like full circle that I'm here in my home state. My son is here with his high school playing my alma mater. And all my guys from my high school, the Fab Five, is here tonight as well. So it's crazy.
You kept using words the last couple days like surreal, emotional, and the fact that you are here with your guys. You had dinner before this game with all your old teammates. It's like a homecoming.
It is a homecoming. You know, we don't get to spend as much time as we would like to, but anytime we get back together, we pick it off right where we left off. So, you know, to have my guys here, to see Coach Drew, to see, you know, St. Vincent St. Mary and the fans here, and then to see Sierra Kane and my son, it's just, I don't know. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. That's how cool it is. It just doesn't make sense.
Now, I mentioned this is the first game you've gotten to see in person. I've seen you after games. You've got the phone out. You've got the iPad out. You're streaming. You got your feet in a bucket of ice, and you're still watching your son. I've heard that you scream on the team plane, and everyone's like, oh, yeah, he's watching another game of his kid. How different is it getting to actually be here? And now you are still yelling, but he can hear you this time.
No, he can't hear me. Hopefully I'm not too loud, and I'm distracting him from what the main thing is, and that's just trying to win. So But I'm just so proud of, you know, not only Bronny, but Bryce and Zuri, my three kids. We just try to raise them the right way to be, you know, like I said, great in the community, be great to their teammates or classmates or whatever the case may be. And, you know, represent the James name, you know, with utmost respect, you know, to everybody. So, you know, like I said, it's an honor for us to even be here. It's an honor for myself to have my family here and for us to be watching such a beautiful game.
But people who are watching you on the broadcast, they're seeing what people who have seen you when your son plays AAU already know, which is your dad. You do all the sports dad things. You yell, you encourage, you do all of those things. Do you ever feel self-conscious that because you know you're LeBron James, getting up and yelling and doing all the regular dad stuff?
Absolutely not. It's all about support for me, and it's all about the love of the game too. You know, without the game of basketball, I wouldn't be here. Obviously, my son wouldn't be here, our family in this position. The game's given me so much. I feel like it's my obligation and my duty to give the game back with all the energy and all the excitement and, you know, giving my son pointers and him giving me inspiration. He's motivating me tonight. So, you know, watching him tonight, I can't wait to go and play tomorrow.
I am going to tell on you to America, though, because I know that you have had to apologize to your mother since you started being courtside at your son's games. Would you like to tell people why you've had to apologize to Gloria?
Yeah, I had to apologize to my mom because when I was growing up playing AAU ball, my mom used to be one of the loudest people in the stands. I'm talking about going crazy at my opponents, going crazy at the referees, going crazy at my own coach and teammates. And I used to be like, Mom, you got to sit down. What are you doing, Mom? Like, you're embarrassing me. It's Mom. I'm looking to you right now. My mom's actually here. So, yeah, I've told her to her face, I apologize. I know exactly how it feels to be a parent, you know, watching your kid play. So, yeah, I've apologized.
And you know how your son feels, too, being the center of attention. And he's just a freshman. He's earned raves from his teammates and coaches about how he plays his role. He's a team-first player, looks to make the pass, looks to make the right play. But you know, as a parent, how much attention is on him. What have you told him about handling and balancing being LeBron James Jr., but also being a kid?
Nah, I mean, we don't even talk about, you know, what it means to be LeBron James Jr. From early on, we've been calling him Bronny for a long time. Obviously, we know what that's short for, but he's his own identity. Same with Bryce, same with Zuri. It's our job in the household to prepare them for life and prepare them for when they walk outside our door to know what's coming or try to be prepared for. When he's playing the game of basketball, all we care about is how, you know, I'll tell him every time before we go out and play hard, have fun, be a great teammate, and everything else take care of itself. You know, so what we're most proud about is how, you know, when parents come up to us and say how well-mannered and how well-spoken our kids are, that makes us, you know, ecstatic. And they say, Miss Bronny is so, you know, he's so nice to my kid, our kids, and Bryce is so nice to our kids, and Zuri, she's so great. That's what makes us proud more than anything. The basketball court for Bronny and Bryce, the gymnastics for Zuri, that's extra credit, you know, for us. But, you know, it's definitely fun along the way.
What are the things at this point in his career, because he is now in high school, it's much more big time. What does he ask you about the most? What kind of advice does he seek from you?
You know what? If you got a teenage kid, they really don't ask for much. They don't really say much. You know, you got to take it to them at this point. You know, he's usually, you know, back home playing Fortnite, listening to music, you know, talking to his friends. So I just try to drop a few gems on them, you know, on a weekly basis, either if I'm at home or if I'm on the road, just continue to let them know how proud I am of him. Make sure that he always look out for his little brother and his little sister because they're looking up to him. And, that's what's most important. So, but you know, you gotta go to them in their teenage years. I figured out you gotta go to them if you want to give them some knowledge.
You know, there's kids all over America thinking, well, if LeBron James was my dad, I'd be asking him basketball advice every day, but it doesn't work like that when it's your kid.
It don't work like that when you're the dad.
You guys know, doesn't work like that, but certainly a very warm moment between them. And it's interesting because as recently as last year, I sat down with LeBron on camera and he said he is hoping to hang out in the NBA until his son could also play with him, depending on when the one and done rule comes out. That could be 3 or 4 years from now. But since Bronny has actually started playing at the high school level, being more in the spotlight, LeBron has made an effort to take that pressure down a few notches. And now if you ask him, he just says he just wants Bronny to be a happy and responsible kid who loves basketball, which you get as a parent. You get why he's trying to do that. Still, it's not stopping the rest of us from wondering what might be. There is this ever-growing, guys, collection of father-son duos in the NBA. I mean, you can go back way further, but let's just start with Kobe Bryant and his dad, Joe Jellybean Bryant. Played 8 years with the Sixers, Clippers, and Rockets. Kobe, did he play in the league? Oh, Oh, yes, right. 18-time All-Star, 5-time champ, 2-time Finals MVP. Jimmy Walker was the number one pick, 2-time All-Star. You might know his son, Jalen Rose, a member of Michigan's legendary Fab Five, scored more than 13,000 points, and of course, our good friend and coworker here at ESPN. There was Del Curry finishing in the top 10 in three-point percentage 7 times. He's got 2 sons in the league, Seth and Steph. Steph, of course, finishing top 10 in three-point percentages 8 times. He's also won a couple rings there and 2 MVPs, plus many, many more. Clay and Michael, the Barrys, Bill and Luke Walton, the Bookers, the Hardaways. I could go on and on. Sinead, you are part of an athletic family. You and your sister both play in the W. So are expectations different when you know you've got that lineage to uphold and the pressure and everyone's comparing you?
You know, I don't have kids yet, hopefully in the future, not so distant future. But it's funny with my younger sisters who also play at Rice University, I feel like a parent out there. Like, I'm stressed, I'm bugging, I'm jumping out of my seat. It's just so much more stressful. And Nek and I always joke, Nek and my teammate and sister, that it's so much easier playing with each other because we can control the outcome. But you do deal with pressures, you know, as family. Oh, my gosh, I can't believe you guys are rolling this B-roll, my sister and I. But, you know, there's 2 different types of pressure. Our parents did not play sports, right? When you have a father like LeBron, and LeBron is a great example, there's so much pressure for LeBron because he was that guy, the chosen one at 14, right?
Right.
Where everyone was saying he's not only going to transform the life of his family, his community, the state, dubbing him possibly like the next greatest player of all time. That is a lot of pressure. Now, for the next generation, for the Bronnies or the Bryce or even the Zuries, right, it's a different pressure. It's social media. It's technology. Mm-hmm. Bronny grew up in the time where there's overtime. There's House of Highlights. There's always a camera scrutinizing every move of his. Not so much the case with LeBron. I know that we saw him at age 14 in a different way. But these guys also have their own forms of pressure. But what I really love is how they coexist, right? Like, one of my favorite moments before D-Wade retired was when Zaire sort of ran up on him after he hit a shot. And it's like, wow, like, they're embracing their parents' current state. Even though D-Wade is retired now, like, now he is at the games holding it down for LeBron James while LeBron is dominating the league. Like, everything comes full circle. It's tough to deal with pressure when you're in the family, but you realize your number one thing is your support system, and they've been through it all.
I mean, this is like being a Kennedy.
Right.
Right, right. I mean, and I say royalty, I mean, the guy's nickname is King James, right? And no disrespect to any of the other players, who NBA alums who were on that list. But this is the first time I can remember the progeny of a truly generational superstar. I mean, you mentioned it. One of LeBron's first public comments was, hey, I'm just waiting around for my son to make it to the NBA. So, you know, perhaps they can play it against each other or together. And I just cannot imagine the level of pressure that Bronny endures. And I mean, the fact that he's well adjusted is in and of itself, given what celebrity culture and all that social media and who LeBron is culturally, is pretty astounding.
I mean, it's interesting how they have really tried to, as a family, take some of that pressure off. You hear what they're saying now. It's been really a 180-degree change. We'll see. Who knows? Yeah. We just want him to be a good kid, that kind of thing. They're sending him to a school in Sierra Canyon that has a lot of celebrity kids. First of all, it has a lot of basketball celebrity kids. Our coworker, Scottie Pippen, who, you know, Mr. Six Rings, his son went to Sierra Canyon and graduated from there last year. Kenyon Martin's kid. I could go on and on. So that's a program that's used to that kind of stuff. It's also a school. I mean, the Kardashian kids go. I mean, it's like,
can you imagine what parent-teacher conferences
at this school?
Oh, my gosh.
Where all of that, and in a way, it's a way to make a kid who, if you are LeBron James' son, not feel as big a deal. The other difference, I think, when people talk about the attention on this kid as, say, compared to the attention on LeBron or some of the other big high school prodigies that we've seen in the past, one of the things that feels frankly uncomfortable if you're some of us in the media or watching these games is you see all of this on the kid and you realize this kid has on his shoulders his entire family, his entire community, his entire school and his teachers, sometimes coming from an area where there isn't much else going on or isn't much else around, and he's carrying everyone's hopes and dreams and financial security along with him, and it's all weighing on him. LeBron James Jr. is not carrying any of that, right? And I do think it's different. I do think if you are going out there and you don't know that, hey, if I do well, my mom could get a house, right? Or my whole family's life could change, versus that's not what's going on
here. It's material pressure versus reputational pressure.
Right? I think it's a different kind of thing when you say, oh, God, it's so much so fast for a kid. It is. definitely is. It's just different. And I think that's an important difference to remember when we're talking about all of this stuff. It is interesting. We've had some great, great kids of kids. We've got guys who are the third, right, making it in the league generationally right now, too. So we will see if this continues with the James family. All right, coming up, we're going to talk about the Philadelphia 76ers. They really missed Joel Embiid last night in Brooklyn. How much trouble are Philly in when their star center is out first, though? It's time for our distant replay. This is an actual distance from this date in 2007.
High screen. Take a look. Story. He'll go away from the screen, put it off his own foot. And
how's that not? I was at this game.
Right across the
oh,
goal.
He makes it.
Boom.
He just slings it up there and gets it.
You could walk from here to where that happened on that court.
Man, that's a heat.
Looked like it went off his foot into the back court.
He's like, yeah, I knew it was going in the whole time.
Look at the flick of the wrist.
McKennie took advantage, and it's down to six.
Boom. Oh, all black, everything.
Darth Vader. You are now rocking with the
best. Gangsta. It's a make or miss league.
It's a make or miss league.
I'm not really sure about that.
It's a make or miss league.
Rachel, it's a make or miss league. How many times do I have to tell you?
It's an 82-game season, Coach. Keep coming with it. Make on Saturday, Jamal Murray beating a triple team with the pass.
That is one way to do it.
Self off the backboard. Do you see any shades of Tracy McGrady here?
Oh, there's more than shades. I mean, there's totally full shadow. Look at that. This is one way to do it.
Anytime we can show that T-Mac highlight, I'm showing the T-Mac highlight. Come on. It's
that's
so good.
That's a T-Mac, though.
This was fun, though. I love watching it.
I like that one. That was
the step through. Boom. Yeah, look at that.
Yeah, step through. Like, not a travel. But that one was deep.
Oh,
that one was real
That's a
deep.
Little more authoritative.
That was a little bit more risky.
Right?
Which made it better.
Boom. T-Mac did it twice in games, by the way. Mm. There you go. Boom. Miss Humility. Today's friend Nick Young posting this video of his 7-year-old son on Instagram. So is Swaggy Pete Jr. already following in his father's footsteps?
Oh, absolutely. Big facts. What do they say? You, yo, daddy's son. I spend time 1 hour a week with Nick Young, 2-3 hours a week. And that guy is not short of confidence. And his son, you know, the apple did not that fall far from the tree.
I was like, is it nature, nurture, or both?
Right, exactly.
Yes.
By the way, you spend time, you guys do a podcast.
Yeah, certified bucket.
You guys just don't sit around and throw behind your back baskets of the basketball to see if they'll go in.
No, we don't. We don't.
Look at this kid. He is
That's brilliant.
Having it.
Shout out to you, Swaggy Jr., Nick Jr.
Woo! Make rock bottom. Last night, the Warriors lost by 21 at home. Draymond Green had what we think was an attempted alley-oop off the backboard.
Tracy McGrady. There you go.
Maybe. Friday, the Knicks' Kevin Knox had a putback dunk on the wrong basket.
Really?
So
I watched that like 50 times. I could not decide what he was doing.
What do we think?
Right? So, okay. So the question is supposed to be who's having the harder time, the Knicks or the Warriors. But the Knicks did just beat the Warriors, so they probably win that discussion, right?
They're competing each other.
Yeah, I think it's an issue of intention.
Right.
So
you don't think the Knicks meant to beat the Warriors?
No, clearly not. The Warriors are going to get a draft pick, come back, and everything.
Right. And then Knicks fans, you can tell this is where we are, that Knicks fans after a game like last night, they're like, but they could have beaten Denver. I'm like, right, but they didn't. Right, because of the score. Misbelief. Last night, Spencer Dinwiddie posterized Tobias Harris. Woo! The Nets bench almost ran out of the gym. Apparently, Kenny Atkinson showed this in the locker room to the team after the game.
Kenny.
Do you think Spencer's teammates just didn't know he could do this?
Yeah, because Joe Harris, didn't he say that? He's like, well, he doesn't do that at all.
Right.
And then Spencer had him. Yeah.
Because here's the thing. Over-celebration is a backhanded compliment.
Very true.
Wow. Right, because in some ways, right, like it's almost like, you're not supposed to do
If
that.
I hit a three, my team is like, oh, yeah. I'm like, no, this is what I'm supposed to be. But I'll still celebrate.
That's
it's fine.
Happy. When LeBron James, who is a dunker, has a big dunk, people celebrate,
that
right?
That is true.
Right.
When Anthony Davis
it,
has
not
a big
always,
dunk.
Right, like it can either celebrate. Be absolute tribute or, right. We're kind of surprised.
Oh, boy. Sticking with this game, the Nets beat the Sixers by 20 points. They had Philly to a season-low 89. Joel Embiid now is out with an illness. The Sixers are 3-3 in games without their all-star center with losses to the Suns, Magic, and Nets. So, Kevin, we thought them getting Al Horford was going to let Joel Embiid take more time off. Now, we didn't expect him to be sick, but right. When he had little bumps and bruises, this was supposed to help. Instead, they're struggling without him.
Yeah, I mean, theoretically, I would say that the Philadelphia should be a team pretty well equipped because, you know, you have a world where Horford at the five, Harris at the four, Richardson a long three, you know, bringing Korkmaz, or they had Mike Scott yesterday, and Simmons, who essentially, though he's a one, can defend all five positions, right? And I still have faith that this, I wouldn't say it's a silver lining. I don't think they can achieve their potential without Embiid, but their offense has been a little congested, not constipated, congested for a couple of weeks ago. And this should, because I mean, again, I think that this might get more shoot, this could get more shooting. And also, Embiid is a guy who requires a lot of post touches. Right. The offense tends to slow.
Okay, so why aren't they better then?
I mean, look, I want to see.
And I don't mean better without him, I mean better when he is not there.
I'd rather have Korkmaz on the floor than Scott. I think Scott's been great. But they're gonna have to get shooting. Again, this all goes back to that. And they decided to go big in the offseason, right? We're gonna size up. Mm-hmm. We're gonna be long. We're gonna be a defensive team. That is our identity. But, I mean, the question is who on that floor can manufacture his own perimeter shot at any given moment? I mean, I don't have an answer to that.
Yeah, there's not an answer, but to me, I think this sort of underscores the value of Joel Embiid because he got himself into a little bit of hot water with the OGs, with Shaq and Chuck, largely because people expect him to be that MVP guy. And I think we're realizing when he's not there, they need him, not just offensively, but defensively. And a lot of people were critical because they're like, you have the capability to average 30. Last year, he averaged 27 points per game. He's only 22, 23 so far this year. But my whole thing is talking about pressure today. I feel like we need to take the pressure off of Joel Embiid because he's realized that, hey guys, maybe I don't need to be this MVP guy. What I want to do is be that guy you need in the playoffs. So everyone's like, we expect you every game. I know his body, his history with health and all that stuff is a little tough, and that's why having Al Horford helps. But to me, Joel Embiid, if he's able to just feel fresh coming to playoffs, that's the ultimate goal. Ideally, you want them to win without him, but he is a guy that's an MVP caliber guy on offense, and defensively, he's a defensive player of the year, always like top four or five in the voting as well.
Yeah, and by the way, I don't think they're a contender without him, so I don't think that's a stretch. No. They're also a team that won 9 of 10 and laid an egg on a Sunday afternoon in New York.
Yes.
Yeah, so I don't want to go like, oh my God, they can't, you know. I mean, let's see. I actually think this can be a good workshop for them to sort of, again, I want to see
how to generate more offense.
They have spacing issues, and they need to address them, and this is not a bad clinic for with which to do that.
This team has made a bunch of moves in the last 12 months, and it seems like they still need to make more before they get into the spring and really want to contend. Coming up, LeBron James says he is not interested in load management. Thank you. Quote, if I am healthy, then I am going to play. Is that a smart move in his 17th season? We will discuss that next. Hey, look, it's your Western Conference Player of the Week. The annual NBA on Christmas Day tradition continues 5 games on the ESPN and ABC networks. We will be at Staples Center getting you ready for Clippers-Lakers. That's going to be so fun. All 5 games are also available on the ESPN app. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel. That's Kevin. That's Chinee. We heard from LeBron at his son's game earlier in the show. That was on Saturday, but on Sunday, LeBron back in Atlanta playing his 27th straight game, leading the Lakers to their 14th consecutive road win. LeBron had 32 points in 37 minutes, and after the game, he reiterated his desire to play every game he can.
I mean, why wouldn't I play if I'm healthy? It doesn't make any sense to me, personally. I mean, I don't know how many games I got left in my career. I don't know how many kids that may show up to a game that they're to come see me play, and if I sit out, then what? You know, that's my obligation. My obligation is to play for my teammates, and if I'm healthy, then I'm going to play. If coach sits me out, then I'm not healthy, and it's just that simple.
Old school, LeBron was also named Western Conference Player of the Week today. All right, so he's only played 82 games once in his career. That was his last year in Cleveland. There's a feeling, guys, he was sort of going for MVP, so he's pushing it, wanted to play all 82 games. And he has said in year 17, he wants to play, right, down the stretch as much as he can. He wants to play more years. We talked about at the top of the show. He'd like to play with his son if it's possible. That's at least 4 seasons away. Is it smart for LeBron to try to play all of these games given what he wants to do in May and June, given how many more years he wants to have on the back end of his career?
So I always think it's subjective, mm-hmm. you know, player subjective. If they're able to, they should be able to. And it's just really interesting because a lot of people say, oh, load management, like we are criticizing, critiquing everyone, whether they play or not, right? Mm-hmm. But as you get further in your career, you have to be smarter with those decisions. And LeBron has typically been the type of guy that plays when he can and is always available. There was a point, I think, in 14-15 where he sort of took a hiatus, but rightfully so. But 14 out of 16 season, he's missed no more than 8 games. So he's a guy that will always be out there. For me, I just think LeBron, it's now or never, right? This is the chance you have to win a championship. And if you saw that Hawks game, shout out to those league past legends that were watching it. They needed him out there every second of the way, right? And he's been playing great basketball as of late. So I'd want to play as long as I'm playing well and also give the treat, considering it's a holiday season, of his presence to everyone, every fan that can see him as long as that lasts.
Yeah, I'm going to watch March, and this is why. When he made his great playoff run and championship run in 2016, he played in only 16 games over a 57-day period. And when you talk to the load management sports scientist types, what they'll tell you is he should be at peak fitness around March 15th, and then you start tapering off, sort of conserving your energy if you want to be at your peak between the middle of April and the middle of June, which is the playoff run. So I mean, that's what I'm seeing. Now I'm not going to look at what he says. I'm going to look at what he does. I suspect that come late March, and if the Lakers have sort of a clinched kind of top seed or second seed, I think we will see a little less LeBron, just as in 2016, and I don't think it was a coincidence. If he plays that chase down block to me does not happen if he plays 3,200.
I mean, look, for one thing, the way the West is shaking out, I don't know how it's going to end up in April, but maybe the difference between the 1 and 2 seed for a quote home court advantage won't matter, right? If it's two LA teams. You won't have to travel. You'll be playing the games all in your building, quote unquote. So maybe that really won't be a race in terms of seating. We will have to see. I do wonder, and I think it is different, as you say, for every athlete, how much of it matters if they just doesn't practice that much, right? If he's only playing a couple games a week and that's really all the basketball exercise he's getting, then maybe it's okay for him in sort of the physical condition that he's in. I have not seen him play this level of defense and this hard in the last, what, 4 seasons?
Yeah.
Right? He hasn't played like this since Miami on every side of the ball, every possession, all the time in October and November. And that is not a dig. That is because he has been managing himself. So I am curious, when he has ceased managing himself and is now playing this different way, what will happen differently in May and June. But it could be that he's made other concessions in other places or just not practicing that much if you talk to people around the Lakers.
And I think all athletes know, you know, we sort of model our strength and conditioning exercises over, at LeBron. Mm-hmm. Because this is a guy that has invested
good luck
a
with that.
Million. I know, but if I had a million, I'd invest a million, you know, in my own body and well-being. And he sort of had that progressive take with health, which is why it's not abnormal for him at this stage in his career to be able to play in 82 games.
To break some barriers there,
exactly.
Too. Yeah, absolutely.
And you bring up a good point. Practice is load.
Yeah.
And one way to, as you say, to conserve load is practice less.
Right, absolutely. All right, let's move on to a much younger player. Doesn't have to conserve his energy, but unfortunately he is resting his body now. The Mavericks receiving a tough blow. Luka Doncic suffering, quote, moderate ankle sprain early in Saturday's loss to the Heat. Tim McMahon reporting Luka might be able to return in a couple weeks. We'll see how that goes. Mavericks currently tied for third in the West with Denver, but they're only 2.5 games ahead of 6th place in Utah, so it is tight in this section of the standings. And here are the next 2 weeks for Dallas.
Yikes.
At Milwaukee, home versus Boston, at Philly, at Toronto, home against the Spurs, at Golden State, at the Lakers. 5 of the top 9 teams in the league in just the next 2 weeks. So, Kevin, in the West, where every game is going to be very valuable once we get to the end of the season, how do you expect Luka's injury to affect Dallas's outlook?
I mean, it's going to be rough. They are the number one offensive team, and they're not going to be the number one offensive team without Luka Doncic. Where they have to compensate is where they've been average, and that's defensively. They've got some good personnel there. They have Finney Smith, Powell, but you're also going to be playing J.J. Barea a lot more. Mm-hmm. And J.J., bless his heart, a little bit of a defensive liability, not a guy you're going to be a top-ranked defense with at the point. So they're going to have to tread water, and it's going to be tough. The good news is, I mean, the West, the bottom of, like, the 7-8
right.
is less intense than it used to be. And so they could come back, hold on to 5 or 6, and then Welcome back, Luca.
I know, it's tough looking at them. I mean, no one really thought that they'd be at the third position at this point in the year. So I guess you can say you did your job up until this point. And then, you know, the best availability, you know, is health, right? So for me, it's just really interesting because when I think about this Dallas team, this could be a blessing in disguise because Kristaps Porzingis sort of needs to find his alpha again. Right now, he's, I think, a career low in field goal percentage, a career low in three-point field goal percentage. This might be the opportunity for him to find his game again. It takes you a while. You know, myself, I know, coming back from injuries, it takes you a year, 2 years. Think about the Paul George timeline and for him to find his game. This will be an opportunity for him to get his touches. I think he's shooting three less shots per game than his all-star year. Mm-hmm. So this is a blessing in disguise. Maybe Kristaps will be that unicorn we've come to see.
Reporters did ask him after the game if we were going to get Knicks KP back, basically. And his answer was very politic. He said, I'm just going to play within the team concept, whatever Rick Carlisle tells me. I think it will be kind of a combo, right? I think he will be featured more. He will get more touches. But it is within that Dallas system that they're playing. We'll have to see what we get. That schedule is serious, though.
Bonkers.
Sure. Coming up, the Thunder on the edge of a playoff spot themselves out west. Now, this was supposed to be a rebuild season with them, but they've got quality veteran pieces. Do they buy? Do they sell? Trade season is officially open this week. We will take a look. First, though, here's what The Jump recommends for today. Kevin Pelton explaining how Real Plus Minus, an ESPN-powered advanced statistic, can be an early predictor on the hidden up-and-coming stars of the league.
Ooh.
Dun, 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 dun. We'll discuss one of those potential stars after the break. It's a really just good piece overall, worth a read for sure. SportsCenter, 4 o'clock Eastern with Hannah and Keith over on ESPN and the app. The latest on the NFL's investigation into the Patriots sideline videotaping. Check it. All right, as mentioned before the break, Kevin Pelton has a great piece up on ESPN.com about Real Plus Minus. Just a little reminder, Real Plus Minus is one of those all-encompassing player performance metrics. At the top, there's your usual suspects. We got LeBron, Giannis, Harden. But when you take a look at the top 10, there's a couple names on there that might surprise you. One of them, Jason Tatum, ranking 6th overall, 4th in defensive Real Plus Minus. Will Barton on there too, by the way.
Yeah.
Kevin, is Tatum's impact on the Celtics underrated?
I mean, I don't know. You talk to Celtics Nation, they will tell you Jason Tatum should run for mayor of Boston. Well, I mean, I don't know. They're pretty rated.
Except he will have to compete with Mayor Kemba, Mayor Jalen, all the other mayors that should come from the Celtics.
You know what's funny? When you watch him, he's so much more intuitive this year, right? Like, there's just better decision-making. Like, he's got a feel. I feel like last year, there was this, like,
very sure of what he's doing.
Gotta get my shot.
Yeah.
Right. Like, it's just, and also defensively. Because one of the things that RPM does is it does help us quantify defense, which is this Bermuda Triangle. We never really know who's a great defender. You see blocks and steals. That can be deceptive. A guy is gambling. But, like, with Tatum, I mean, he is a guy who's essentially playing the four for them.
Mm-hmm.
And he has become a multi-positional defender. And again, just like look at his shot creation this year. It's just so much more sensible. So much, and you know what? And he's not less aggressive. That's what's beautiful. And that was always the sense of, well, I have to be aggressive. They're smart aggressive and kind of dumb aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
And God, he's really intelligently aggressive right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, and it's one thing a lot of coaches tell you is let the game come to you.
Right.
He's let the game come to him, and he's picking his points. He's picking his spots. A lot of people were like, oh, working out with Kobe, was that good for him? Well, obviously it's hard to implement that one season, like into one season, the season after.
No, the question was Kobe trying to sabotage the Celtics as a Laker?
Exactly, and I tried to make it
way
better.
By planting bad ideas with Jason Tatum's head. That was the question going around the internet.
The show's so much more fun with conspiracy theories.
Very silly.
Yes.
But yes, no, to your point. Look, we all know what the problem was last year, right? And it was not a person, by the way. I'm not making that point. The problem was they had too many guys there who were all trying to do the same thing. Danny Ainge has come out on our show and said it. Brad Stevens has come out and said it, that they did not organize the roster in a way to have the locker room and the guys on the court and the chemistry and the shots and everything else have success. And they feel they are much better in that department now. And you can see it in Jason Tatum's play.
Yeah, and why do they have better chemistry? I really like Kemba Walker just because I've always told people, he's like that perfect Boston fusion of Isaiah Thomas, that small, undersized scoring ability, and Kyrie able to take over games and also finish well at the rim given his size, just that clutch factor also. He's had experience in Charlotte with that. He's a good fusion Kemba, but he also is a good complement to Jason Tatum offensively. He knows when to get him the ball. Kemba is good at making reads. He's not going to take the shot because I know I can make it. He's going to make sure you get the best shot available, and that helps Jason. Also, defensively, we see his defensive numbers are better. defensively, I like Jaylen Brown, too. I think this is a guy that's athletic, and he's starting to tap into his body. You know what I mean? Like, he's being able to be explosive in transition, and just he's finishing better than he was. All of them look way more comfortable, period. But offensively, I like the Kemba and Jason, and then I like the defensively Jaylen and Jason. So he has a comfortability that is really enjoyable for him, and he could just play his game and let the game come to him.
I want to get to what just happened yesterday because it was significant Sunday. More than 90% of the league is now trade eligible. I'm not trading either of these two at the table, but eligible now are several players who changed teams this summer, including Chris Paul. Now, our Adrian Wojnarowski said on the Woj and Low trade season special that we aired last night, he does not expect CP to be moved by Oklahoma City this season. Shanae, look, OKC is sitting there at the eighth seed. They look like a team that could hover there all through the rest of the season. It's not just CP that they have. They have a guy like Danilo Gallinari. Yep. They have Steven Adams. And the assumption was that they would spend this season getting rid of those remaining contracts, acquiring even more draft picks and young players so that basically Sam Presti could just actually run the draft for the next few years. But now I got to ask, would you buy or sell if you were OKC?
On which player? Chris Paul or any of
them? In general. Are you a buyer or a seller now? You've got basically the trade season is open as of yesterday.
Yeah.
They've got until the first week of February. Are you looking to make some deals for some of these other
guys? I'm in rebuild. And I realized this, you know, boarding a flight from Connecticut last week.
Yes.
There was an OKC fan in front of me, and he was like, we've got to get everyone out. Meaning, like, we have to create a new identity. Now, I know Chris Paul's contract is hard to offload. But in the time being, I think everyone else, you can sort of see what the value is there and to try to get young players. But Chris Paul, even if he's the guy that remains, it's not bad. This is a guy that knows how to play basketball, high basketball IQ, can help mold the young guys until you can put him in a position where he's better off.
Right. The OKC has this challenge. They have too many competent basketball players to outright tank, and they're probably not good enough to contend. Though I agree with you. I think that competence can get them an 8 seed in the playoffs. And to what end? I mean, look, there's value in that, I suppose. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Mm-hmm. There are worse things than to face the Los Angeles Lakers in a playoff series or the Los Angeles Clippers. I think it's going to be situational. It is going to be very hard to move a center who is owed $28 million next year.
Right.
The league is not into the acquisition of centers anymore. It's seen as a mercenary position. So with Adams, I think it's difficult. With Chris Paul, I just don't see the natural buyers for that contract with whom we thought.
But there will be people knocking on the door for Gallinari.
Yes,
absolutely.
And I think that is
absolutely
a guy that you can move because he is
a four
who can shoot.
Here's the thing about Oklahoma City. You have a fan base that had very high expectations for a lot of years. They are used to playoff success.
MVPs.
That building is crazy, right, come playoff time. It is a tough pill to swallow saying, you know what, we're just saying this isn't working. We're getting rid of Russell Westbrook. We're getting, right, we're making all of these changes. And I think we're getting rid of Paul George. I think when someone comes and offers you the bonanza of picks they offer for Paul George, you say yes. If someone comes along and makes you a really, really good offer for Gallinari or maybe even Adams or one day maybe for Chris Paul, less likely to happen, you say yes. If that doesn't happen, though, if it's not a sweetheart deal, I might say as a nod to those fans, let's just get in the playoffs.
I just don't think Gallinari is a legacy player in Oklahoma City. That's
I know,
the difference.
But he
could
make the difference between the eighth
I don't think
seed
people,
and the
I'm not
spot,
renewing
though.
Gallinari is going to be on the team.
Maybe they're
not. And he's also a free agent.
But giving those fans a playoff experience versus not, as they are let down slowly.
That's why I was shocked on the plane when he was like, we are in rebuild. I was like, really? You guys are used to success. Are you sure it's not too much too soon? He's like, no.
All right.
Let's start over. So
fans are funny. They've gotten into this sort of the Machiavellian.
Let's progress.
Get him out. Up next, Giannis and the Bucks just keep on rolling 18 games in a row. But it could be that they're actually flying under the radar. We'll explain this. First, though, it's time for our second distant replay of the day. This one from this date in 2012, courtesy of a rookie, Dame Dalla. He was like a Dame 75-cent piece or something.
Oh, I cannot.
Maybe a full silver dollar, actually, there.
He's got a ton of those.
So good.
Last
He's like, oh, you didn't see me play at my smaller college? Let me show you what I can do.
Cash out. Same dollar. Let's take a look at the replay. You are now rocking with the
best. Gangsta. The guard. I know it's minutes away. Pablo and I will discuss if the Cowboys look like they could actually make the playoffs and win a game.
Does Urban Meyer make sense as the next head coach in D.C.?
Did the Raiders fans go too far?
And the best 7-year-old basketball player in the world goes by the name of Lil Swaggy. So, Rachel, we ask you to stay tuned.
I would never do anything but, Pablo. Wednesday, we have another doubleheader on ESPN and the app. Jimmy Butler and the Heat capping off their three-game road trip against Joel Embiid and the Sixers. 7 o'clock Eastern. That is going to be a good game. And then the Mavs hosting Kemba and the Celtics right after that. All right, it's crunch time here on The Jump. Markelle Fultz having a full-on revival in Orlando. After the Magic's win over the Pelicans, former teammate in Philadelphia, J.J. Redick, told The Athletic, quote, I feel like he's in a good place mentally and physically, meaning he's in the right spot in Orlando. It's actually a great story by Josh Robbins talking about how Redick chased Fultz down to the team bus because, of course, they were together in Philly, and he just wanted to make sure he knew how proud he was of him, Kevin.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Can he develop that shot? I have no doubt. I mean, he can get to the hole. Mm-hmm. I mean, he gets where he wants at a half court. It's going to be really interesting to see the shot development. And, you know, there have been signs. I mean, it hasn't been a disaster that it was in Philadelphia. I mean, it's starting to take form.
Let's be honest. He is not the only player in the league where we say, gee, he still does need to develop that shot.
Ooh, big facts.
At least now he's doing all the other things we knew he could do coming in as a number one pick.
I love your subliminals, Rachel.
I'm just saying. The untucked jersey problem is spreading. It's an epidemic, people. Last night, Elfrid Payton called for a delay of game, entering with an untucked jersey. Now, on the broadcast, you can hear the referee say, y'all can thank Chris Paul for that. Sinead, do you expect to see more texts or delay a game for untucked shirts?
Yeah, I mean, the free reign is gone. You know, I feel like everyone's blaming Chris Paul. I'm blaming the T-Wolves, though, because you had an opportunity to win the game, and if they actually won the game, we wouldn't talk about the heroics Chris Paul went through.
The heroics. The you know heroics. What I mean? Like, listen to that.
The heroics.
The league's killjoy, Chris
there
Paul.
There we go. Let's move on to the Dion Waiters story, because we have to. We now know part of the reason for Dion Waiters' latest suspension. ESPN sources confirming a 5-reason sports network report that Waiters missed multiple practices, telling the Heat he had a head cold, and then was spotted going out on a boat with friends. The Heat learned of the outing. They suspended him. The word yacht, I was told, was involved. Kevin, what do you think about Waiters' latest suspension?
I mean, sea air is great for a head cold, right? I mean,
I went on a limb and went out there and defended this man.
You can't do that.
No. At some point, he's going to have to figure out if he wants to be a professional basketball player.
And the Heat are going to have to figure out if they still want him. On our show on Friday, George Sedano and Kendrick Perkins said they don't know if he'll ever play in Miami again. We will see. Let's talk about the Milwaukee Bucks, because they are rolling, winning their 18th straight on Saturday. They're now tied with the Lakers for the best record in the league, 24-3. But the buzz seems to be about a lot of other teams. Today, is the Bucks' win streak flying under the radar?
It is, just by nature of how successful they were, league's best record last year. Mm-hmm. And now we expect them to be, you know, they have all the pieces together. But I think it's flying under the radar because I think this is a team that is actually preparing for the playoffs as they play each and every game.
Sure.
Right? The game that Giannis was out, role players came out and balled out. Right? Like, they have a tremendous sense of urgency this season. And then Giannis himself, I mean, if you look at his numbers from three this year, they grow. I know this was similar to last year, but I think he's around like 16% in October to 20-something percent in November. Oh, there's 31% in November, and now shooting 45% from three in December. Like, this is progress. Now, the difference here is that Giannis, he's already made 43 threes so far this season. He made 52 total last year.
This is, like, look at that chart. That's insane. And again, everyone has just casually thrown around the phrase for so long. Well, if he gets that outside shot, he's got it. 45%.
A third of the season, he's making almost as many as he made all last year. So this is a team that understands their criticisms, right? That the role players didn't step up in time, that Giannis needs to develop that outside shot. They're doing that and winning. Granted, they're not in like the big schedule time period, but
I think they have a huge game on Thursday.
I think it stops Lakers being under the radar on Thursday. That's a great
game. That's going to be fun.
On there. I mean, in a way, I think the attention has largely focused on Giannis. He's the MVP and he's putting up better numbers than he even did last season. Is that maybe a reason why we haven't been talking about the rest of the Bucks constellation quite as much?
Right. The performance caught up to the potential.
Right.
Right. And at any point that converges, now it's like, yeah, wake me in March. Right. Wake me in April. And by the way, it's a compliment to them.
Yes.
I think no one is under the impression other than this is the best regular season team in basketball.
And last season
they can do
it was like, ooh, look what the Bucks are doing. Ooh, look how scrappy they are. Look how together they are. Now it's just like, yes, this is the Bucks, and we are expecting to see them in May and June. All right, let's go to our buzzer. Look what Sinead did just before the show.
Oh,
I don't know what this is.
I was doing my best, Trae Young. Let's go.
This is what happens when you have ballers on set. And the hair too was.
So I was inspired by Trey Young because I was trying to do it with the beat drop. Oh no. Y'all got the dance too? Oh no. I sort of jumped up.
What did you hit?
I was like, man, forget the seams in my dress. Let's hit this shot, sis. That's what I told myself in my head.
Impressed.
Thank you.
I was the official home scorekeeper, and I get
it. And how'd it go?
It went very well. Yeah.
Look, again, I said it at the top of the show, multi-time all-star, number one overall pick. It's not like we don't know you can hoop, but from the seat in heels.
I'm not good with the paper one.
All right, so we got the smaller nets there for the paper. We'll throw that there as she goes behind the back, people. Thank you to Chinee and Kevin for joining me.
How'd it go?
Back
not
on
very
ESPN
well.
Tomorrow.
Not well at all.
You and Nick Young have a lot in common. I'm just going to say that.
Swaggy P. Jr.